shore where the mountains meet the sea, in a clapboard shack by a broken down tree. There's a light in the window, two salty gals inside. I'm not sure if they're witches, but you know that's implied. Got the storytelling, ego swelling, pillow talking, moonlight walking, sea hags.
Welcome to the Sea Hags Podcast. I'm Chris Jeppa.
I'm Katie Norgren. Wow. Okay. With us this week is Sorry, the giggles.
Our a guest, case of the our giggles. Our guest gave me such a look because I did my radio voice.
It's true.
Sounds like she's on old-time radio. It's Caitlin Fontana.
Well, hello.
Oh, hello.
All the way from New York City.
Oh, I came on the 4 o'clock train. I didn't. I came.
That would have taken so long to get
so
here.
So long.
Yeah. Just so
you
long.
You came in a car to go that I picked you up in.
That's true. Beautiful cardigan.
From a sky tube, I assume?
Yes, the sky tube landed mere hours ago, so I'm still a little bit wonky, so I apologize, but it's fun to walk right into talking about yourself when you're still feeling emotionally vulnerable about...
Great.
I feel like it's still unnatural for mammals to, like, get into a thing that carries us a really far distance and drops us somewhere else, so we all pretend it's cool, and we're all like, yeah, I'm having a Caesar and watching a Hedy Lamarr documentary, but inside your
she
organs...
She invented Wi-Fi!
Yeah. Inside your organs are screaming, and you're like, they're like, we don't like this, put us back on the ground! We're still lizards inside. And here I am. Hi.
Here you are. And you just had to get in that I'm very, very lofty and cool, and I listen to documentaries of, of 1930s and 40s stars.
Not only did I listen, I watched.
You watched? Yes. Thank you for that.
Yeah. It's actually really great. If you, here's another one for you. I met the filmmaker at the Nantucket Film Festival last year.
Oh. Nantucket. I've heard of
that. There once was a film festival in Nantucket.
It's true. And she was just this lovely woman who spent like 5 years of her life making this documentary and had put all her own money and time and effort into it and was finally starting to reap rewards for it. And it's really good.
Cool.
I recommend it.
All right. What's called? What's the director's
Bombshell,
name?
Bombshell, the Hedy Lamarr story.
Oh, okay.
Director's name is, I'm an asshole.com. I don't
remember.
Cool.
That's cool. I'll find a link to it.
Uh-huh.
Found on good planes everywhere. Air Canada, WestJet, one of those.
Love it.
The best.
Speaking of, like, film stuff, you were at the old Sundance Film Festival.
I was, yeah.
It's, like, one that the lay people would have heard of.
It's true. And I'm also realizing that by drinking this sparkly water, I'm going to have to burp quite frequently during this, which is
That's
not
fine.
Good audio.
We have an episode with Alicia Tobin that is just all burps.
Oh, great.
So, yeah.
What a treasure Alicia Tobin is.
It's true. And
much better
than
me.
Pretty good podcast. Well, I mean, a little bit.
Yeah. She's a little bit better than all of us.
She's
I know.
A dog,
fucking
so.
Hank.
Hank's a
love
conco.
Him. Yeah. Oh, sorry. I didn't ask if I could swear. I swore.
Of course.
Okay. Fuck.
Fuck.
Balls.
Yeah, Sundance. I went to Sundance. I wrote and directed a short pilot project that the producers submitted to Sundance, and I was like, cool, I don't think that sounds right. I don't think they do stuff like that, but you guys do your thing.
Mm-hmm.
Not knowing that they were newly doing a category for episodic stuff.
Oh, cool.
Cool.
So we were in the inaugural... class
the
of
age
the...
of prestige TV, my ladies.
It's true. That's what it is. It's like finding a place for independently produced television.
Cool.
So it was really great. I highly recommend Sundance in any way, shape, or form as a like organization to be involved in. They've been so lovely and kind to me. And once I was a director there, they were like, you're a director now. And I was like, I know I've directed quite a bit of stuff, but I don't think of myself that way because I have the comedian's sense of self-deprecation.
You have a giant cone to talk into.
Right, yeah. I've heard it's in the mail, but I haven't gotten it yet.
It's a suspicious cone-shaped package. It's been held up by the TSA somehow.
Yeah, yeah. And they're like, is this for directing? Is it for traffic? I should have stopped before
How about
I said that.
Directing traffic.
Oh!
There you go.
Slide whistle.
That was a Trump-like belief that you had just there.
I told you guys I was in a can above the earth mere hours ago.
It's a horrible thing.
Yeah, it's weird.
I'm not in favor of it, yet I do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been doing it quite a bit. Mm-hmm. But
yes, because you're very busy and important.
I'm so busy and so important, and Sundance was lovely, and I'm like... They gave me a free membership for a year. They send you emails.
Well, that's
they're
how they
very
get you.
Nice.
You're gonna have to buy 12 Sundance movies.
Well, what's great? I mean,
put it on your mom's credit card.
You're so cynical. Sometimes people just want to help young creative people do stuff, Katie.
They do?
Yes.
This has not been my experience in Canada.
You've been in the Pacific Northwest too long.
Yeah, there ain't no money for that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Nobody wants to give it to us.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was great. I really enjoyed the experience, and it's made me feel much more cool. like a director and creator in a more strictly like professional sense.
Yeah, a little piece of legitimacy. Mm-hmm. You know, it's always nice to have some external validation too.
It is, yeah. I mean, yeah. You can't live off of it.
Yeah.
But it's nice to have someone. Yep, Katie. Newsflash. Coming down the wire, you can't live off external validation.
Oh, shit.
Also, Hitler's troops are marching on Poland.
Oh, no. He's a rapscallion.
Oh, no.
Well, what a mustache. Back to you. Yeah, so, yeah, it's been a good, edifying couple of months of work and creativity. And yeah.
I enjoyed it very much that, you know, I've known you for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
12, 13 years, something mm-hmm. like that. One of those long ones.
Yeah, yeah.
One of those long ones. So yeah. It's lovely to see you again. And, just seeing you, like, getting interviewed by, like, a Sundance person about your, like, directing style, and I was just like, oh my god!
Did they have a microphone that had a cube on it that said where the microphone was from? Because that feels like a very important
thing. They did, yeah, it was Collider. Wow. Yeah, which is, like, a big
Collider?
Film.
Mm-hmm, big film news
site.
Yeah.
And they were very sweet, too. They, that again, that's the thing, is, like, that's what I would say is unique about that festival, is that I've been to some other film events and things, and there's always, like, a clear hierarchy of famouses up here, and then, like, underlings of famouses, and then filmmakers,
the
and then, yeah, and then, like, everyone else. And Sundance, like, evens that all out, so I was treated with the same respect as, like, Darren Aronofsky, who had, like, a VR thing there, or, like,
ooh,
you know.
He's such a nerd.
He's a big nerd, yeah. But, yeah, we were all treated the same, which is, I think, unique to that festival.
Is Sundance in Colorado or
Utah?
Mm-hmm. Right. Colorado is Aspen.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, but they're similar. I mean, I was struck by everyone's like, "It's so beautiful here," and I was like, "I grew up in this." Like,
yeah, it's
I grew up
the
in
same
mountains.
Shit.
Yeah, yeah, it's very similar. Yeah.
Where are you from originally? Vancouver.
Fernie.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Fernie,
BC, baby.
Fernie.
Mm-hmm.
You have a brewery now.
Yes, run by a guy I went to high school with.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and he like resurrected this old brewery that had been in existence like 100 years before, that was like
damn.
The miners and loggers that lived there created their own beer, and then he came back and fixed it. I don't know why I'm giving him a free commercial, but it's good.
Yeah, yeah. Great.
It's
Is
nice.
It just called Fernie Brewing?
Yeah, Fernie Brewing Company.
Great. Easy.
Mm-hmm.
Cool guy.
Look
yeah.
it up.
Right on.
But yeah, it just, yeah, it excited me very much to see that, because I just like, you're one of the people that I've known for a long time that seems to have always kind of had this vision of like what you were going to do. And the fact that you're just like, yep, I'm going to do that thing, and you've just been doing that for quite a while, I would
Rather
say.
Bold of you, Fontana, wouldn't
yeah.
you say?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And just, you know, I remember talking about, like, your vision of, like, I just kind of want to be a Diane Keaton-esque, like, living in New York, like, writer, doing cool
big old
shit.
Nancy
like,
Myers kitchen.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And I'm just like, wow, you're kind of doing that thing.
Typing and crying at the same time. Yeah, I
My
thank you.
Turtleneck.
I can't wait till I can do turtlenecks regularly.
Why wait?
I mean,
it's
I feel like...
It's kind of warm, though.
Yeah, well, much like yourself, I have a heart-shaped face, so it creates a different effect.
Yeah.
I don't have that Keaton face.
Mm-hmm.
Heart-shaped
it's
faces.
It's a surreal cross to bear.
It is.
The Keaton-like face.
thank you for saying so. I mean, obviously, everything looks different from the outside,
yes.
And it hasn't always been easy. I'm poor as fuck. My personal life is always a mess. And I'm constantly in a state of self-discovery, chased by self-immolation and then a reset. But, yes, thank you.
My entire idea of success is based on 30 Rock, so it seems like you're doing pretty good.
That's mm-hmm. very, yeah, I would say that that's...
Like on the Liz Lemonometer.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm up there. I'm not in the baby craving phase yet, thankfully. But I'm up there in the Liz Lemon insanity phase. No, it was good. Moving to New York City was a very good big thing for me to kind of kickstart my shit, because I'd been in Vancouver for a long time. I loved it here.
You get complacent though, I think.
You get a little complacent, mm-hmm. and I loved the comedy scene here. I think I just sort of outlived my desires within it, which isn't to say everyone does. It's just what I wanted was more than what this place could give me anymore.
Totally.
And
Yeah, there's a real hard ceiling.
There is, but it's also one of the most beautifully creative weirdo paradises for all of the creative shit that we all do.
Oh, sure.
And it's a good place to come up for that reason, I think.
Yeah, although that's the adage, is that a lot of people say it's a really good place to get started doing comedy or to, like, become good at it.
The incubator or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of. I think so. It is sort of hard to have fun doing it here, but it's not hard to get lots of experience.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I get that.
Yeah.
I also feel like the thing that is special about it is I watch now, having been in New York for 6 years and being part of the improv community there and now being like a quote unquote vet of that improv community, which by the time I moved to New York, I already was an improv vet in like a gross extreme way where I was like, yeah, I've already been improvising for 10 years. And people are like, why?
Don't you know that you're allowed to stop?
Yeah, yeah. What? I don't understand.
Did you have to kind of start over a little bit? Or people just kind of accepted it? It's like, oh no, you've been doing this for a while, I guess. Like.
No, I mean, there was some of that. And I ended up at the theater that I ended up at, which I'm not going to name drop because the guy that runs it is a prick and doesn't deserve the attention. but you could find it out easily enough. And he knows that I hate him, so it's fine. It's the Pit. We're enemies, it's fine. It's a beautiful space with a lot of wonderful, excellent creative individuals, but it happens to be run by a not a good person.
Tell us more about how much you hate this guy.
Nah, I don't want to give him my time. I've given him enough of my time over the years. But what's great about it is I see now, I've sort of been able to live through and, you know, doing a feminist comedy show for so long and a bunch of other stuff that I've sort of seen how hard it is if you just come like straight out of university or whatever, college as they call it, and start your comedy career in New York or LA. There's just so much more pressure, and I'm so glad that that didn't happen for me because I would be crushed by it. But being able to come to that city with a voice, you know, which has changed a lot, and my skill set has changed, but a lot of the feelings I've had over the years about what's important and not important have been kind of from the point of view of like, I'm already older than a lot of these people. I'm already know who I am and what I want to make, and I don't need to care if somebody doesn't put me on a team or doesn't do this or doesn't do that. Mm-hmm. And that's really hard, I think, for people who really want to succeed but come to New York like at 21.
Yeah, and they want to find their place and their friends and figure out, exactly.
Yeah, and they get crushed if they don't make a house team for an improv thing, and I want to be like, it really doesn't fucking matter at all. Like, it doesn't matter at all.
You could be the greatest improviser in the world, mm-hmm. and you're still not going to, like, be able to afford rent.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah. What improv is good for is just meeting other people to create other things with.
Yeah.
And having, for me, it's like a vacation from life, and it's therapy in some ways, too.
Sort of like dark church a little bit.
So much so. And I, as someone who I didn't have my people for a long time, and finding improv was a thing that made my world kind of make sense when nothing else did. And it is definitely dork church, and I've been a part of it for a long time, and the cultiness is real, but I love it. And like the team that I perform with in New York, which is called the Studio System, every Wednesday at 9 p.m. at the Pit. Yes, I said it. I've been on that team for like 5 years now. Yeah. So it's by far the longest and most committed relationship I've ever had. And like how I love my relationships with several people at once. So, yeah.
Great segue.
Thank you. I'm good at those.
Okay, Miss Chatelaine. Mm-hmm. That's so very exciting that you have like a recurring series now in like the Canadian Women's Magazine
mm-hmm.
that has a Katie Lang song about it.
That's right.
Yes. Ooh. That's why I get very excited. Anything to do with Katie Lang, and I'm like, can I bring her up for some reason?
Yes. What a national treasure she is.
So perfect. So buttery.
Aside. Nice. Yeah. Also, I didn't know until like a couple days ago I was looking at the tweets to see if my thing had been retweeted. Yeah, I'm that person. But I found out that a chatelaine is like a kit on your belt to carry like your baking stuff.
Oh yeah. It was before you had pockets like right. for women's things. It's like a metal belt with like a bunch of little thingy doodles, like
basically a tool belt, yeah, but for baking.
A lady
stuff.
Tool belt.
I mean, that's kind of cool.
And keys and things like too. It's kind of sort of like a Swiss Army knife
for when you were like the house matron walking
exactly.
around, like knocking at the landlady or whatever, yeah. and it's like, oh, I'll fix you dinner, and then I'll.
I just learned about that going to the museums in London. You see.
But is that better than learning about it from a tweet? Debatable.
It's very debatable.
Yeah.
It's a little bit better.
It is better. It's much better.
We get it. You went to London.
I know. I'm so jealous. You're from New York.
No, but I love London. Mm-hmm. I'm so jealous. I've only been there a couple times, and I would love to go. But back to my
column. To you.
More
back
importantly.
To your stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's, you know, discovering who I am relationship-wise has been a big mm-hmm. part of my self-discovery journey. I mean, you and I think, started talking about this 12 years ago.
Yeah.
It's taken me a really long time to kind of figure it out about myself. And, you know, a lot of that is, you know, societal, patriarchal bullshit and
society.
Everything. Fuck society, man. They tell you everything is good and it's bad and you have to unlearn it. So because I really wanted to commit to this and not flake out on it, mm-hmm. I was like, I'm going to write about it. And so then that makes it real. And my lovely therapist in New York was like, well, it's in the column. She was like, tell everyone, tell the world, so then you can't hide from it anymore.
Uh-huh.
Because then people are going
to
ask you.
Yeah, that's one way to defeat shame about your own personal desires or whatever. It's mm-hmm. just like, yeah, open the window mm-hmm. that kills all the mold and all the damp and all the, you know,
yep.
all the bad stuff that festers in there.
Let the sun shine
in. And then no one can, like, hold anything over you because you're just like, I'm just going to be open about it.
I've already
this.
Roasted yeah. myself. What more can you do?
Yeah, exactly. So that's sort of how that came about. And then I actually wanted it to be an ongoing column, but they very smartly were like, no, just write four. So I'm about halfway through now. Mm-hmm. It's been good. I think I figured a lot of stuff out by writing it down.
Yeah,
which is
and
nice.
So I don't think we've actually said, so it's looking at, like, non-monogamy.
Yes.
In relationships.
Yes. No, very good. It's like we're talking
very
around
subtle.
It.
Yes.
It's a column about becoming non-monogamous as an actual, like, relationship choice, not as a passive, but an active choice.
Mm-hmm.
And creating my own love life around that in a way that is open and edifying and
ethical
and ethical
because like
ethical very important.
It's very easy to slide into patterns of just like, well, I don't really know what I want, so oops, I'm just gonna do this thing and mm-hmm. it was a mistake. And it's like, no, it's actually what you want, but
yeah,
you're just falling into maybe like yeah things that are
yeah, which has it hasn't been clean and it's ongoing. Mm-hmm.
Like a phoenix rising from the ashes, and you just keep burning yourself down and coming back up.
Exactly, self-immolation.
Yeah.
No, I think that's this has been a big declaring it and writing about it has made all the difference because I feel like it's slowed me down in a certain sense. I've become more thoughtful. That also could just be like I'm 35 now, and that makes it easier to slow down. Because I'm tired all the time. That's been cool and interesting, and I'm still kind of figuring out my own boundaries and my rules and everything. But and you know, to your point about, you know, whether you purposely or accidentally do a non-monogamous stuff without it being ethical, my third column, which is coming out not this coming Tuesday but the following Tuesday, talks about when I fucked that up.
Mm-hmm. It's very easy because just yeah.
Well, and I don't fall in love easily. Katie just drew a penis and vagina in a really beautiful way.
A vulva, technically.
Yeah. Well, sorry. Yeah. I mean, it's in there. I can see it in there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She's busting it open. Sorry, guys.
No, I love it. It's very beautiful. I wish everyone could see it.
I doodle so I keep listening to people while they're talking.
So you have a podcast. And you don't like listening to people.
Oh, I love listening to people. I just, instead of waiting for my turn to talk, it helps to doodle while they talk.
Very good.
So I'm not, like, trying to formulate a response. I'm just, like, listening and letting my brain be a brat on the page.
I like it.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Thank
I
you.
Wish people could see it.
We could take a picture.
We could.
Yeah.
I wrote the words sex nerd and then, you know, did a one-line drawing of a penis and a J.
Mm-hmm.
Connected
it's
by
beautiful.
The thread of life.
I love it. Sex nerd is fun. I like that phrase.
It's good, sex nerd.
Anyway, it's been cool. It's ongoing, but it's been nice to kind of just sit back and think about my
mm-hmm.
shit instead of just hurtling towards the next thing.
Are you?
You can be fumbling towards ecstasy
oh
instead.
Oh my god.
Sarah McLachlan.
I find myself surfacing instead.
Oh, India. I'm so sorry.
Christmas album.
Ice cream.
Sad dogs. Dogs are so sad.
Oh my god. Are you the type
Canadian
of
treasure.
Writer Like, have you had many publications online? I think you've written, like, for The Walrus and, like, all kinds of other stuff. Do you engage in, like, comment sections in terms of, like, especially because this one's so personal and you're doing a lot of reflective work, do you get people that are, like, mirroring experiences back from the comments and you're like, interesting, I'm learning from this? Or
yeah, I mean, unsurprisingly, the comments break into kind of two sections based on something we could probably assess, men and women. The only two genders. Absolutely not the case. No one, as far as I know, no trans people have spoken to me about this column.
It's because they're all poly.
Yeah, they're like, they're we already,
like,
knew this.
Yeah, like, we're way
great job, straight white lady. Who cares?
For the audience at home, Caitlin just made a very subtle jerk-off motion.
I did.
It's just so delicate.
Thank you. That's all I have to do. I don't know about you guys, but that's all I have to do. I just literally barely touch a penis and it explodes. Literally explodes, not comes. Just the penis itself explodes.
Where can I acquire this power?
Just blow up some big dunks. Just focus.
So wait, are you Matilda grown up?
I wish.
Oh my god.
Let's
get Mara Wilson in on this.
Please.
She can blow up dicks with her mind.
I bet she can. Yeah. She seems like she can. Anyway, wild digression. I don't even remember what I was saying. Oh, comments. So the men who respond to the articles more often than not are like, thank you so much. I'm bored with my girlfriend, and now I know that it's fine and I could just cheat on her.
Oh,
cool.
No.
And I'm like, nope, dude, not what I said. Not remotely what
I said. No, you said it's fine.
Yeah. And oh, by the way, you're hot. I'm like, because they, like, find me through Instagram or something, right?
Thank you.
Yeah, maybe I'd, since you said I'm hot, I agree with you. There's a lot of that, and I'm like, please wait and continue to read this column and read The Ethical Slut and Sex at Dawn and other books and things about it. You won't, because you're a dude, but please
stop. They hate reading.
They hate reading. They can't read.
They can't.
Newsflash, no man can read.
The ones that seem like they're really intelligent are just pretending. They they wrote the book themselves so that they can.
That's every male so author many... is just Jessica Fletcher with a rubber mask on.
That would be amazing.
Or I was thinking that, like, why we have all these, like, pretentious male authors. They just write books because they can't actually read books. So they have to write about their own experience.
Somehow they can write, but they can't read.
No, don't you know that all the great novelists had their wives transcribe things? Oh, that's true. Right. Yeah. That's so true, and it's really so depressing.
True. So true. But then a lot of women have reached out and been like, wow, I never really thought about this for my own life, which is what I wanted. Because I think there's a lot of, and especially what I wanted it to be in a Canadian magazine, one that reaches, like, women in smaller areas or whatever. Like, I wanted to not to be like, I want to help the women of Canada. But I do. Like, I grew up in a small town. There's so many, like, weird attitudes about women and sex. And I was just like, well, if I'm thinking about this, I'm sure other people are too. And maybe, and that's been what has happened, is a handful of women have come forward and said, this made me think, or I have been thinking about this. Thank you for writing about it. A couple men have said it in a nice way too, but but all men are guilty until proven innocent.
But, like, you know, you don't know what your options are, really, until you're presented with the menu item, right? Where it's just like, oh, I thought I only could pick this thing. It's like, no, there's, like, a whole bunch of other things. You're like, what? Really? I had no idea.
I mean, there's, of course, the additional barriers of just, like, shame and stuff once you know the option is there. But if you don't have the option, you can't even have the crisis of consideration.
Right.
Of course, that could be easier.
Yes.
But, you know.
Definitely. And, like, my mom is freaking out a little bit right now. And she's one of the most, like, chill, liberal, cool ladies. You've met her, right? Did you meet her at my book release party? When did you meet her?
I read a book.
It's okay. Minus four people bought it last year. Anyway.
Four people returned it?
Well, what it really probably means is a store ordered copies and no one bought them, so they returned it. They returned it. Why you bought a 7-year-old book about a very specific sliver of the Vancouver record scene is beyond me, but okay. That's on you, bookstore.
They're just all copies in case Nardwar loses his.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because over the years, I know this is like a side, again, this is a wildly digressive conversation.
This is what a podcast is.
I love it. And also, I feel like I'm waking up right now. Like, I'm starting to come to life. So, I'm sorry for you because you're going to get just a word spew. That over the year since that book came out, it's been a music nerd. Like, people in the music industry who are nerds have liked it. Mm-hmm. Like, Andrew W.K. loves it. I see him every once in a while in New York, and he'll be like, hey, it's you. You wrote that book about Mint. I like you. And I'm like, you don't know my name, but that's fine. But yeah, a lot of cool, fun, interesting music world people have told me they like the book, but none of them bought it, so it's fine. Anyway, that's what being an author is all about. What were we talking about before that?
Comments and women needing the options, like getting them, like figuring out that they actually have the potential to do that, but then dealing with the fallout, I guess. Mm-hmm. So, oh, well, and your mom, and you're asking me where I met your mom, but I don't remember, but I know I've met her.
Yeah, and she's like a cool, she was a drama teacher for like 40 years. Recently retired, and I love her to death. I think this is just a little much for her to take. She keeps saying, like, I never worried about you growing up because you were just, like, a really responsible kid, and now all of a sudden you're doing all this stuff that makes me worried about you. And I'm like, it's okay, Mom, I'm 35. Like, you don't have to worry about me. She's like, but I do.
She will always worry about
me. Yeah, yeah. And I get it. I totally get it. But she doesn't need to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's kind of not her issue.
Yeah.
But yet.
Yeah.
Yep.
And we've always been very open in my family, the three of us, like my mom, my sister, and I. And so it's like, my sister and I have this thing now where we say to each other, like, Mom, it's too late. You were like a non-rules mom when we were growing up. So now you can't all of a sudden be like, wait, you got to be careful about the thing. And it's like, nope, too late. We're not careful.
Yeah, we're already fearless and brave and free to do whatever we want.
Yeah, you already created.
We all got our HPV shots. We're good to go. See ya, bye.
HPV shots, whatever. We all just have HPV.
Yeah, we all just have HPV.
Actually, I had it and then it went away. My body killed it.
Mm-hmm. Mine too.
Good job, guys.
Thanks. Yeah. A little oven in there just cooked it right up.
Nicely done, bodies.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Good work.
Mm-hmm.
My body ate my IUD. So.
Really?
I don't know. I'm going for an ultrasound in a couple of weeks to see inside.
Wow.
I have a stand-up joke about it, which is partly why I haven't gotten to get it fixed yet, is because it's still funny to be like, I still haven't done it, because I'm stupid.
You know you can just pretend that you still haven't done it and just make the joke about that anyway, right? You don't have to tell the truth. No one can see your IUD from the audience.
Except for that one gig where that guy with the nice glasses showed up.
Yeah, Superman was there. It was weird. He wouldn't stop looking at my snatch.
Wow.
Yeah, no, it was weird.
Huh.
He didn't do that. No, I you know what?
He was there, but he was a gentleman.
I want to make it clear that he was there, but he was polite. He behaved himself. No, I just, it's funny that you would say that because I know that, but also I really, like, don't lie in the things that I joke about. Like, really, most of the jokes that I tell are just things that happened to me with very little embellishment.
That's lovely.
Is it? Blessings. It's not really writing, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
It's just like, this happened, and people are like, oh, oh. Did it now.
Well, if that's not writing, then nothing I've made is writing either. Okay.
Well, that's a relief, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that whole column is just things that happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, put together in a good way.
It's called memoir.
Memoir. It's the only thing women are allowed to write.
Yes.
Yep.
And only about our feelings.
Do you have any?
Feelings?
Mm-hmm.
None.
Mm, me neither.
Android.
The Arc Android?
Yeah. Sexy Android.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dirty computer.
I also have an IUD that I wonder about sometimes, but it seems to still work.
That's good. You're not pregnant.
No, that's what I mean.
That's cool.
And I got it long ago enough that I got it here.
Oh, like, wow.
It was installed in my body in Vancouver, and then I left for several years, and it's still in there.
Mm-hmm. Well, good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I
keep on trucking.
Yeah, well, every time I talk to a doctor about it, they're like, when did you get it? I'm pretty sure I got it in 2010 because I think the Olympics were happening. That's all I can remember.
The pole vaulted on into there.
Yeah. And they're like, no, you're fine. Like, they can last up to 15 years. And I was like, what? Because I have the copper one.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Well, cool, man. Stay in there.
Yeah. Once it's out of there, it could go to like grade 9, basically.
Right?
Yeah.
Again, longest relationships of my life, my improv team and my IUD.
Perfect. Both will, you know, both make you unfit to be a mother.
Yes! Very good. Very good. Yeah, you nailed that one.
Thanks, guys.
Nailed it.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, and.
Okay. Oh, man. I had to make a confession to Katie the other day where I'm like, I'm thinking about taking improv classes. As a writing tool.
Yes, it's very good for that.
Yeah,
yes.
And to kind of shake some stuff loose in my brain, because, mm-hmm. like, I've been very gummed up in the works.
Mm.
And,
sticky.
In the old brain works, I need to get some lube in there.
Fuck.
But yeah, like, and so, like, when I've been jamming with friends, we've been able to kind of, like, and then, like, I start kind of just saying words, and then suddenly I'm like, these are actually kind of making sense, and these are a, suddenly a theme has evolved, and now we know what the song is about. I'm like, I've got the power in me.
Yeah.
I've got so much stuff in here that just needs to, blah.
Chris has invented scatting.
Really?
Yeah, it's a really amazing.
Like, I just start saying boom, boom, since boom, bop, 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 boop,
boop. Oh, is that what it is? Because since you invented it, I didn't know what it was.
No, I say actual words, Katie.
Oh, okay, so you're basically doing, like, Anthony Kiedis-style lyrical writing?
Yeah, nothing wrong with that.
Burbank.
Yeah, that's all. That's a good summary.
I really wanted to do a mashup of Janelle Monáe, Take a Bite, because it's got the... With Dirty or Go Robot from the new Red Hot Chili Peppers record, because it's got the same clap clap.
Oh my god, that's a good idea.
So then it's like, yeah, like I wanna thank you and spank you upon your silver skin. Robots are my next of kin. Yes. Says Anthony Kiedis.
Yeah.
And
Anthony Kiedis wants to fuck a robot.
He sure does.
I mean, we all do, don't we?
I want a fucking Anthony Kiedis robot. That's fair.
Not the real one though. Ew. I started listening listening to a bunch of their albums on Spotify the other day, and I was like, oh my god, I love this, but like it isn't good. Like the words are bad.
Yeah.
The
I mean, I think really some of the earlier stuff I still stand by as being kind of thoughtful bro rock.
Thoughtful bro rock. Yeah. Ooh. Yeah.
Which was essential to my development.
They talk a lot about, like, colonialism stuff in some of the earlier songs.
No, it's true.
And they, with a few exceptions in the songs, they treat women pretty well. Like, women
except
are
held. Sexy Mexican maid.
That one.
Or, oh, she's only 18, don't like the Rolling Stones. I mean, please don't fuck someone who's 18.
That was okay,
he
then.
He did that.
Oh, he definitely did that.
Yeah. Oh, he did that a bunch. Like, it's super legal, but it's also gross.
He probably also fucked Cher when he was, like, 14 himself.
Mm-hmm.
So... You
they
know.
Looked the same. The two of them looked the same.
Oh, that's interesting. I like that most of the men I loved growing up are slowly turning into, like, old lesbians. Like,
yes.
The look becomes the same. Like, someone posted a really funny tweet the other day that was hilarious because it just was like, I don't care what anyone says. I know. Now I'm saying this and I'm like, this sounds transphobic and it's not. But I don't care what anyone says. Julie Roberts looks great, and it was a picture of Steven Tyler. And it was very funny, because they do look a lot alike at this phase. We all just become one sort of vaguely genderless, long-haired, weird thing when we get older.
Everybody just turns into a Diane Keaton when they get old enough.
Listen, I'm not going to look like her at all. I've been thinking about that a lot lately. It's like, who do I... Because I don't really look like anyone in my family. Do you ever think about what you're going to look like?
I'm going to age into Ron Perlman.
I would love that for you. That's all I want for you.
Human Thanos, basically. I have not seen that movie and I never will.
No, you're... I want you to be like a Hellboy version of him.
Just turn into a devil, pretty much. Yeah, no, I'm going to definitely be a Dorothy from Golden Girls. Like, I'll be a full-on B. Arthur, I think. Because I already have, like, the Dowager's hump that she kind of had. It was just like...
You're tall.
I'm tall. I'm tired of it.
Yeah, I could see you wearing some swishy long garments.
Of course, but it would be like the super long pants and then like a long creepy tunic over top. And
exactly.
I'd just be like, ugh, all the time.
And just kind of throw yourself across a lanai.
Rose! Yeah, just like that.
Yeah.
And then be like, oh, Blanche, you slut.
Mm-hmm.
We love you.
Yeah. I would love to age into like a... Like femme fatale, grand dame, Blanche kind of thing. But I'm definitely just going to be like a little old Russian grandma that like shops at the grocery store down the street. Mm-hmm. Like I have this black and white coat that's a big sort of blanket coat and it goes down to my ankles. And I was
your basket of yams.
Well, I was wearing a nice scarf and then it started to rain, so I put the scarf over my head and with this big coat and the scarf, I caught my reflection in the Polish deli and I looked and there was a little granny next to me and she also looked exactly like that.
And she looked in the glass and went, one of us.
She's like, do you have a baby in that bag?
And so my breath is just going to constantly smell like sauerkraut.
Like, can't wait.
Yeah, once I'm 60. I saw my mom for dinner last night. She looks fucking awesome. So maybe I've got some good, like, my dad was looking pretty healthy all the way up until his death, basically.
Yeah.
Like, he looked pretty good. I think I've got some good genes in there. So at least I'm not really going to have wrinkles.
Yeah, yeah.
All that much. I'm going to keep the plump face.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is like a sort of Ruski thing to have, like, just a bright
Just a moon-shaped head.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I have a bit of that myself.
Yeah, but I'm just going to get, like, plumper and shorter, probably.
I got the angles that are going to soften into jowls is what's going to happen for me. And that's okay, but, like, yeah, the... Well, you know what? Actually, I have one aunt on my mom's side. My great aunt, I want to call her Dorothy now that we've just been saying that, because she has the same sort of carriage.
Yeah.
As Beatrice Arthur. It is my aunt Joyce.
There you go. You found it.
Yeah, my Auntie Joyce, she's, like, pushing 90 if she's not already 90, and she looks phenomenal.
Mm.
However, everybody else has either, like, died pre-70 or just, like, did not look very good towards the end. So I'm just like, oof. Sephora, give me your unguents and your creams and your serums and your...
I always thought that I would be that kind of person that's like, you know, when I was in my 20s, I was like, well, I'm not going to use wrinkle cream, I'm not going to get Botox, I'm not going to get any stuff done, I'm just going to embrace the aging process. And now that I'm like, I do have wrinkles on my eyes, I would totally, like, I've been using a good cream, a night cream.
I would fully get some Botox in my forehead. Not, like, a lot, just a little.
There's a few folks that have been having some, like, body modification surgeries that have just been popping up as, like, almost like a weird little... You know how you have, like, a personal kind of synchronicity, like, geisty thing where it's like, why is everyone talking about this? It's, like, only the, like, very small... Like a
microblading
small...
or whatever?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, like, it was on the Jackie and Laurie show. No, Karen and Kira Can Read. It was, like, someone who was, like, a fat woman comic, and she got, like, a major surgery and reconstructive, like, whole face stuff. And then Roxanne
Tammy Gay... Tammy Pascatelli?
No.
Oh.
I don't know. Kelly something. I'll look it up. But then Roxanne Gay also got the gastric bypass surgery and, like, wrote about it in a really emotional article.
Oh, I'd like to read that. Because
she wrote that whole memoir about, like, her...
It's literally called Hunger.
Hunger, yeah. And, like, looking at fat phobia and weight bias and all this. Because I did my thesis on it at SFU, and so I, like, gave her a bunch of my research to use for that. I was like, please just use, like, even all my sources and whatever.
Oh, yeah, you sent her that stuff. That's crazy. I did.
Wait, so who? To Roxanne Gay?
Mm-hmm.
What?
Yeah, she was looking for a research assistant on Twitter.
That's amazing.
And so I, like, wrote to her. I'm like, this is exactly, like, my field. So I would happily do whatever research you need me to remotely. And then eventually we talked back and forth a little bit. And she was like, actually, I don't really have anyone to... Like, I can't really pay you, so it's not fair. And I'm like, okay, well, I did this thesis, and it's sitting literally just in the SFU archives, and I've compiled all of these things, so here you go, just take this.
Yeah.
You know, if you need some summaries or whatever.
Yeah.
So I'd like to think that it helped and she used some, I don't know.
Did it seem like she did?
I don't know, I haven't read the book.
Oh, the book.
I should read that book.
I know, but then, so then she wrote this really, heartfelt article about, like, maybe it was easier for me to change my body than to change society.
No shit, man.
Right? So, like, that was, like, it was kind of like, oh my god, what's gonna... Am I gonna reach some kind of a breaking point at some point as well? Who knows?
It also gets really, like, when I was intensely working on The Box, which was my feminist comedy show, which we just wrapped up after our third season, when I was intensely working on it, like, especially season two, up to the election and after, and which, by the way, we did a show on election night, and it was one of the worst, saddest things in the universe.
Oh, my God.
Because we, like, took over the theater and had all of these pro-Hillary things. We had a fucking balloon drop. The saddest thing in the world, without question,
is a balloon drop
that doesn't happen.
So they're just still hanging in anticipation.
We pulled them down, like, as a collective group of balloons, and we're all just, like, crying. And, like, it was awful. But anyway, so all the work leading into that show just, I mean, you guys know, too, you're activists and you're, you know, people that work in society and work on this shit.
We care about human, insofar as we care about human people,
you care about human people, and you do, you know, I know both of you are vocal about stuff.
We wave signs from time to time.
Right. It's exhausting to be that on top of it all the time, because it is, you're trying to chip away at this huge, massive iceberg, and sometimes feels like impossible.
Yeah.
And after a while, I was like, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah. At what point do you say, like, this is fucking up my mental health or whatever? And I need to disengage, and then you kind of beat yourself up because it's like, I have all this privilege to be able to disengage with this when people are literally fighting and dying for so many things, but then you're also just like, this is the only life I fucking have, though, so you kind of, I need to take care of myself.
Yeah, I ended up kind of feeling like I needed to just approach it a different way, and that was my feeling about it, and, you know, I feel like in some ways I definitely still feel guilty and, like, I failed things in a certain sense, but I think that's the same... impulse that she's following, which I totally understand, which is, like, she has to be, like, a living monument to these issues, and she's already super engaged and talks to people in her life because that's who she is as a writer, and it's, like, sometimes you just want a break, like a literal break from the thing. Mm-hmm. And it's hard. You can't take a break from being a woman. You can't take a break from being fat. You can't take a break from that stuff. But if you can find a little opening to go out of it for a minute. I mean, my opening is like just working with women. I do all female sets. And that's like a way that I've helped to sort of heal my feelings around everything. Cause it's like, I just try to avoid men unless I'm fucking them. That's it.
That's what they're for.
And then it's nice if there's a woman there as well.
Yes. I appreciate if there's a lady.
Like high five when he does something stupid.
Yeah. Yeah.
Look at each other. It's like, you think that's eating
pussy? Come on. Yeah, yeah, am I right, Charlene? Yeah. Oh. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't know why your name's Charlene in this, but not in New York.
I like it.
I wish there was more Charlenes. I'd fuck a Charlene.
It's just the teenage dinosaur from Dinosaurs.
Oh, no! I don't want that.
Well, she's probably very much an adult now. Or dead, because it was Dinosaur Times, and she was also a puppet.
Oh my god.
Hey, there's fairies in the world, guys. I'm not the weird one
here. That's too many layers. Oh my goodness.
That's a lot of layers.
This woman that I respect very, very much, she's like a social work, yes, yeah, so she worked with like victims of torture and like all these different things and worked in the opioid crisis. She's very, very much about what is the best use of me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in any of the work that we do. I think like all of us still have the same values and you're still working towards the same cause, but maybe you realize the position that I'm in right now and the work that I'm doing actually isn't the best use of me. Mm-hmm. I'm not as effective. I'm getting angry, stressed out. Mm-hmm. Everything else in my life is falling apart. I need to find a different way to serve this larger cause.
Yeah.
And every cause needs like a super like diversity of tactics, mm-hmm. right? It's like not everyone can go to marches, but some people can only go to marches. They can't write letters. They can't do whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Some people write impactful things. Some people write humorous things that make people think about things in a different way. Everyone's got their own skill set to bring to the table, but we're all still doing the work.
Right.
It's just what the best use of you is. And that made me feel so much better about like quitting frontline, you know, really hardcore support work and stuff like that, to be like, I actually have a better skill set working in politics than I did. I was not a very nice person when I was working with clients, and I maybe did more harm than good to some people. Right. So this is not the best use of me.
Agreed, yeah. So I think that's a really good way of putting it, that I think that sort of floats around some of the ideas. But it can sometimes feel extra privilegey to be like, well, the way that I help is I make films. It's like, all right. Heavy eye roll to that. But it's true, like, that's... And I feel happy to say, like, through The Box and other things, creating jobs for women in the film industry.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're a job creator now.
I am.
Well, you said sort of specifically, like, you wanted a female-only crew for the stuff that you were doing. And
the project that went to Sundance had a fully female crew. And I asked for that. And they said, oh, we'll see what we could do. And then they hired a production coordinator who I was, like, who had been working at Above Average, which is a very bro-y comedy organization. Very nice people. They do really good work, but it's very heavily male, as many comedy things are.
Mm-hmm.
And, really? Yeah. Is shocker.
Turns out.
Shocker.
Wow.
So they decided that they were going to, she was like, I'm going to make this happen. And so we did. And now I feel like there's this lovely, I'm tapped into a lovely pre-existing network of women who make shit in New York, which is also hard because it's not a huge production city. Everything happens in LA. So you sort of have to cling on to people, but then a lot of people now who have worked on things are getting lots of work, which is great because there's more stuff happening all the time, and now there's more of a focus on in the industry because of everything that's been happening on making sure that women get work. So
awesome.
It's been cool to watch some people that I worked with on The Box and other things like get jobs as everything from a PA to a production designer to writer director, whatever, all of it. So that's good. That was the goal of the show, which is also why I was like, well, I'm tired. I love this thing, but we're not necessarily doing more than we've ever done. People are getting jobs. They're doing the things that we set out to do. So it's probably time to retire this.
Yeah. It's kind of served its purpose a little bit. And now is everyone fly free.
Yeah. And I was paying for everything still. And it was very stressful to do that. So, and I could have tried to get other ways to pay things, but I also realized I've been, and a stand-up friend of mine, God bless stand-ups in all of their glory.
We are like gods.
Yes. Human gods brought to earth.
And nuns and nurses and doctors all in the same thing. We're all basically heroes.
I mean, what's great about it is I think on the improv sketch side of things, we get very precious sometimes about our shit, which is why it's easy for you guys to make fun of us.
It's very, very, so easy. Very easy.
But what's great about stand-ups is you guys are great and terrible about you, is you're ruthless with yourself and others. Mm-hmm. So when I was talking to my friend Christian Finnegan, who's a lovely stand-up who I'd worked for in a writer's room, he was my boss, and I just directed him in a pilot, which was fun.
Cool.
I was talking about The Box, and he was a fan, and he was like, I was like, I think I'm going to end it. And he's like, yeah, 3 years is a long time to produce a live show.
Oh, yeah.
And that was the simplest... I was like, but I, in feminism, and he was like, no, 3 years is a long time to produce a live show in New York City. And I was like,
yeah, it super is.
Yeah. So he kind of gave me permission a man gave me permission to end my feminist show. And so I did.
Oh, thank goodness.
No, he's one of the good ones. of which there are like two or three.
So he tells you.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Just kidding. He's probably great.
No,
he's But to have that kind of like, just because you don't really know because you were just doing your own thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, how many other people, like, other showrunners do you really hang out with? Because everyone's so busy fucking running their show.
Yeah.
So then it's just,
and fucking.
Like, when you compare notes, it's just like, oh, yeah, that is actually really long. And so that's legit.
Mm-hmm.
You don't feel like you don't need to overachieve.
Yeah, and also just to come up on the feeling of having produced shows since I started here. So we're talking, like, 15, 16 years of producing live shows, not just in New York, but in Vancouver, which had its own set of challenges, too. And just kind of saying, like, you can take that energy and make film projects or do other things now. You don't have to do that anymore. It was a nice thing to give myself permission to do. Do you produce any stand-up shows here?
I did for about 2 years.
Yeah.
I was running a monthly at Big Rock Urban.
Mm.
It hasn't officially stopped, but I just
say,
like, I'm
you're
not
now
just
referring in the past tense.
Well,
which
I'm not actively planning any for the future. I may regroup with them sometime in like August, because it's just like, it's very hard to get people out during the summer and during the winter. The shoulder seasons are pretty easy, but we really struggled this year.
You almost need like quarterly show or
Like, the day of the week we were hosting, it was a Sunday night, and it's in Olympic Village. It's just not a super convenient location. It's not hard to get there, but it just isn't in the middle of anything.
Right,
so
people won't stumble into it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's, like, a very industrial area, honestly. There's a lot of, you know, electrical shops around, so if it was a Friday afternoon, I could probably get a shitload of people in there, but that's not a time that people do comedy.
Right, yeah.
We are limited by the form and the established function of the form.
When Katie Ellen was on this podcast, she said something about, like, having brunch comedy would be amazing.
It'd be great.
And
Nobody's doing it.
There's no reason that you can't at least, like, try to pilot, like, one.
Yeah.
And just see how it goes. Or, Friday afternoon, like, the happy hour show, or it's, like, Friday at 4. And I bet there's a bunch of comics that would love to do that, because they could get one set out of the way and then do something later.
Totally.
And then people, it's like, just come straight after work and have, like, a little...
Yeah.
You know.
It's funny. I mean, I think people just get into patterns and ways of doing things, and they don't... I mean, the thing about that is, like, as someone who's produced, when you say that, I'm like, cool idea. And then I think about, like,
the
25 logistics that would go into it, as I'm sure you do, too.
Yeah.
And then you're like, well, never mind. But it's the same problems exist in the New York scene also.
It's weird what works in some places and what works in other places. It doesn't work in, you know, what I'm trying to fucking say. I'm just mush-mouthing it super bad. But, like, I've never done comedy in New York because the only time I've been to New York was before I started officially doing stand-up comedy.
Sure.
But I'm hoping to come and do it sometime.
Please.
Okay, since you asked, I'll do it.
But no, it's like, I think it's good for people. Like, Katie Ellen came and did a couple months, and we hung out a little bit.
Yeah,
and
I think I've seen, like, a video from that time, actually.
Yeah.
And she's so talented and so funny. But, like, I've done it in Seattle, I've done it in Portland, I've done it in Edinburgh, and I've done it in London now.
Mm-hmm.
In London.
Oh,
sorry,
how was that?
It was fucking great.
Yeah?
I had a great time. Edinburgh was probably the best.
Yeah.
I don't know, there's something about my sense of humor that appeals to Scottish people. It's pretty much the same without the accent.
Scottish and Canadian have some affinity.
There's quite a lot of, like, that whole, like, those fuck asses underneath us.
Right,
like,
totally.
My God.
Yeah.
And we're constantly being conflated with them, and it's very irritating
to all of us.
Yes, so. So it is really similar.
I bet you play well in New Zealand as well.
Oh,
yeah,
almost certainly. I mean, I love Kiwi humor is like, my favorite thing, and Taika Waititi, like, fucking watch it.
Oh, my God.
Like,
incredible.
He's so hot, and he's, like, he's super talented, super smart, super funny, but, like, the sexiest little shithead I've ever seen in my life.
I had his pictures, his GQ photo shoot on my like, computer backdrop, and I was working my part-time gig was at, like, a co-working space, because I could just write all day, and this woman who's, like, who's there all the time and was very upstanding, like, poised lady who did, like, would sit like this to type. Yep. You guys can't see me, but I'm sitting very straight back.
Extreme posture.
Extreme posture
she
typing.
Actually Mavis Beacon.
Yeah, very, and like, would lay out everything on her desk in a certain way and whatever. She walked by and was, and like, fully stopped and was like, who is that? And I was like, oh, it's, I almost said, that's my boyfriend, but I didn't. Because I was like, she's going to find out. I was like, that's Taika Waititi. He's this amazing Maori, like, director, writer-director. He's from New Zealand. He's awesome. He directed the new Thor movies, blah, blah, blah. He has all these great things. She was like, shut up. Why does he look like that? He's so amazing. She just, like, lost her complete cool.
He has the most beautiful hair.
Oh.
It's so thick and so perfectly salt and pepper. It's, like, 30% white.
Yeah.
70% black, so it's just like, oh, he's so virile, but he's smart.
Yeah.
And he's small, so I know he's, like, compact. I could just, like, flip him over my shoulder in his little pineapple onesie and give him a little spank on the butt.
Yeah.
And I was just like, we're going to the beach, Taika! You're like, yay!
There's a lot to be said for. I usually, in my life, have tended to like bigger men, because I'm a smaller woman. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have daddy issues, so I want them to throw them over their shoulder and spank me.
I'm sure some guys are into that somewhere.
They are. Oh, they are.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I've tended to, like,
lady,
the
so.
Giant, yeah, I've tended to, like, giant men, but mm-hmm. Of late I've had encounters with a couple of shorter men, and one young man in particular who used to be, was, like, a teenage wrestler. And still looks like he is. Like, we make fun of him at the theater for being, like, we call him Marty McFly. Like, he just looks like a teenage boy.
Aww.
And he's so sweet. And he's a very nice, kind, generous lover. But also, like, the same height as me. And I hadn't really experienced that before. But it was, like, he's strong and small. But, like, we collided exactly on the same parts.
Oh,
where I'm used to, like, having to, like, climb onto somebody.
Yeah, yeah. Like a belaying harness or something.
Yeah. Yeah, basically. But this was,
or you,
like,
just lie down.
Yeah, you just
lazy.
And their heads up here, you, and you're like, it's fine.
But yeah, having someone the same height.
Oh my god, Taika Waititi, he's so fucking hot. Him and Jemaine Clement could also get it because they're both half Maori and or Maori or whatever it's pronounced, and half Jewish, and that's just.
Whoa, is that
what
it is?
I love Jewish men. I don't know what it is, and Jewish women too. Just like the God chose correctly is all I'm saying.
Yeah,
right? Like, God's chosen people. Mighty fine choice, God.
I agree with that.
Great selection. Love that curly dark hair. Love the love the big noses. Love the. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a stereotype, but it's also like, I love strong features on anybody.
Me too. Yeah, New York is.
I like
an
interesting face. Oh
a
my
great
god.
Thing about New York, yeah.
Oh my god.
I mean, just also all kinds of human beings, which is also true here, I think, to an extent. But
not
there's just
really.
A lot of there's a lot of white people in Canada. I've been noticing on my revisit.
I felt really healthy when I was in New York City, just because I'm just like, well. Like, there are a lot of very chic people in New York, but there's also a lot of very blue-collar type people there, so I'm kind of like, well.
And we all look sick. That's a thing
that I've noticed. I'm built sturdy. I kind of look like I just popped in from Minnesota to, like, just get a little bit of culture. Like, oh, I want to get a rush ticket for Hamilton. It's not going to happen.
Whereas in Canada, you get a rush ticket in Hamilton. Get it?
Oh, that's fucking so good.
Celebrating. I'm celebrating. Celebrating my joke.
Wow.
Celebrating.
That joke landed closer to my heart than expected.
That's all I want.
Tom Sawyer.
What a tag.
Are we doing this right?
Yeah, you did it right. That's right.
Oh, that was beautiful.
When a man comes down the pike and he falls with somebody.
And a dad in the garage is listening to the song. And he's drinking Old Mill and he's making a project. Karen, can't you leave him alone?
I thought you were going to say he's drinking old milk. And I was like, interesting.
I should have said something like Kokanee or something easier to rhyme.
Yeah.
So I was like, Kokanee's Old Milwaukee. Yeah. Kokanee. Takanee.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Breaking Me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, this is why you are a world-class songwriter.
That's why I am Geddy Lee of Rush.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, did anyone know that Geddy Lee's been the co-host of this podcast the whole time?
The blacksmith and the artist.
Anyway. That's better. I couldn't find that.
Reflected in his podcast.
We should take over karaoke again and do that.
That was insanely fun that time. That was one of the drunkest times I've been in recent memory. But it was.
We took over karaoke at this divey bar. And there was, like, no line. You know, normally karaoke, you have to spend long waiting. It's like, we were just like, we're singing now. And they're like, okay.
It was great. And all of the sort of cool dirtbags who were there loved us very much. Because we were singing, like, a ton of Pat Benatar and other, like, 80s power rock. Mm-hmm. It was really good fun. Really liked it.
I feel like it's weird. It's like, I get the urge for karaoke, like, once every 6 months. And it's like, I need it now. and I'm very bad at it. As you just heard, I'm a terrible singer, which you've known forever. I remember when you used to have, like, lovely parties where everyone would be musicians and jam, and I'd be like, I'm going home. Because I'm just like, I'm dead. This isn't for me.
When are you going to have a cool joke writing party?
Yeah. That would be terrible.
It would be a very bad party. I've tried to do that several times with people, and it's not good.
No. Just pretend it's a writing meeting, and then it will become a joke party. Yes. But don't aim for it to be a joke party.
And then
you
just end up showing each other videos on YouTube on your phone.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. As a good party always should go.
That's also how it works in a writer's room where you're getting paid to write. You just show each other YouTube videos.
Hey, you guys remember that thing from Mr. Show? That show we all watch for some reason?
Yeah, exactly.
It'd be cool if we could get some sandwiches with mustard A&A's.
I thought about mustard A&A's the other day.
I think about it at least once a week. Yeah. Jay Johnson, if you're listening, I'm always thinking about mustard A&A's.
Mustard A&A's. It's funny, I watched The Post on the plane and it's great. I love newspaper
movies.
Isn't
John Ennis in that movie or something? No, I'm sorry.
Well, both David Cross and Bob Odenkirk are in it as staffers at the Washington Post during the Nixon papers. And it's weird. It's like Bob Odenkirk in a thing separately, David Cross in a thing separately, fine. But the two of them being there together, I'm like, I don't believe this is a Spielberg movie. This is a weird Mr. Show that goes on for 2 hours.
There is no, I cannot suspend my disbelief in this situation.
Yeah.
It's too much.
And there was a lot of those, it's Spielberg now, so he can have anyone he wants in his movies.
Ready Player the Post, am I right?
Right?
Yeah.
But, so Carrie Coon is, like, a great actress, and she's one of the staffers of The Post.
That's K-U-H-N, right?
No, C-O-O-N.
Oh, ooh.
Yeah, unfortunately. Not great. But she's wonderful. And Tracy Letts plays, like, the council, and they're married in real life and are, like, theater stalwarts. And I saw them in Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, which is, like, the play they met in that
play.
I go
to the theater.
I don't, actually. I go for a shameless, terrible non-amount of times, considering I live in New York City, but it's fucking expensive. Yeah. But I happened to go to that show, and that was distracting, too, so it was, like, there's this Mr. Show thing going on, and then there was, like, those two are actually married, but they're pretending they don't really know each other. That's weird. I'm a filmmaker.
I always find that so strange, and, like, I like the lack of ability to suspend disbelief. Sometimes I enjoy the falseness of it. Like, the fact that it is a construct is sometimes the most enjoyable thing for me.
Yeah. Well, especially Spielberg.
I'm in on the joke.
Right. Spielberg is so Spielberg.
Really, his movies are about movies.
They kind of are. I know that's you're being pretentious and weird, but it's true.
Oh, yes.
Fake
pretentious. Okay, here's the thing. Yes and no.
Fake pretentious, though, isn't pretension just fake? Whoa. So what's fake pretension?
No, I'm fully being pretentious, but I'm self-aware of the fact that it's pretentious, so I'm undercutting myself by being like, look at how pretentious I'm being.
That's very pretentious, what you just said.
It is, but it's also honest.
It's true.
I'm a strong, honest young man.
You are. So strapping.
So strapping. I'm a real strapping young lad. Yes.
And I love that you're just wearing like a boot black outfit from Victorian times.
Freshen your drink, governor! I am wearing a sleeveless shirt with a pizza pentagram on it.
That's true. That's better than a Victorian boot black outfit. But it's like how I could lie because no one can see you.
I look like a background character on Daria.
You do look like a background character.
It's
on
like,
Daria.
Oh, the storyboarders who are lesbians are trying to like give themselves some subtle representation in the background.
Oh my god, Katie. Should be in your bio. Background character on Daria?
Yeah,
that's
basically
phenomenal.
I've never even watched that show. We did not get the MTV.
Oh, well, I don't think I did either, but it was on something else late at night, I feel like, that I watched. Like, Beavis and Butthead and Daria would be on. Was it on Much late at night? Yeah, that makes sense.
See, I watched a lot of Beavis and Butthead for some reason.
Yeah.
I am Cornholio.
You are Cornholio.
I need TP.
For your bunghole?
For my bunghole.
Oh, my God.
Bunghole.
I haven't thought about that in years. That's great.
Well, so You know what? I think about it every time someone says the word TP, honestly.
Oh.
Instead of toilet paper, I'm like, TP for my bunghole. That's what it's for.
You're having a lot of conversations about toilet paper. Is everything okay?
No, my butt's wrecked.
My asshole's a mess.
It's just a disaster. Who's got a nice one? Get the fuck out of here. No, we just, yeah. I can't really respond to that other than the fact that we do use a lot of toilet paper, but it's because my wife blows her nose constantly and we don't want to buy Kleenex.
Also, two ladies in a house just uses a lot of toilet paper.
It's true. We just, like, can't stop wiping.
Mm-hmm.
We just love it.
Just love
to wipe.
Wiping is my kink. Is this where you guys wanted this podcast to go?
Yes. Always.
Is that actually your kink? Because that's really boring.
It's very boring, no. No.
I like to have my feet beaten with reeds. That's my thing.
Ooh.
That's not really
good. That'll probably feel kind of nice.
I did actually get a really, really intense foot massage the other day. It was pretty nuts. The guy who said his name was Charlie, I'm like, that is not your name. Your name is certainly not Charlie. But he beat the fuck out of my feet, and I thanked him for it. Mm. And I gave him some monies. This was
just
not a Craigslist.
Feet?
And my calves.
Oh, fun. Yeah, that's an underappreciated body part to massage. Yes. I think also for those of us who walk a lot, which... Mm-hmm. I assume you guys
New
do.
York City.
I do, yes. Mm-hmm. On hard ground. Mm-hmm. And my ankles are totally fucked up now.
Mm. You need to get yourself out into the forest.
I know.
At some part.
It's been too long.
When I did go to New York.
Green baby.
with my mother, I still had a Fitbit, and I think we walked like over 10 miles a day over there. Yeah, easily.
I forget because it's just part of my life now. And it's good because I don't exercise otherwise.
Like, people really do eat like shit there, but it's harder to gain weight in New York than it is in LA. People have to eat like kale smoothies there because they're in a car
all the time.
Forever.
Mm-hmm.
But in New York, you can have like 3 gross sizes of pizza because you've walked it off by the time you get to your 18th story walk up.
Wow, LA?
Drink 7 glasses of wine and eat chips. That's
why you have to
live.
Be so obsessively health conscious in LA, because you don't ever move by like incidentally.
Wow. Smart. LA and New York sound like really different.
You know, it's just like...
Burn.
Some of them, some Classic. For some people, just like... and some people are Peoria people.
Mm-hmm. LA people them. Walk like this.
Whereas New York people are like, get the fuck out of my way!
I like it. I would like to go back to a busier city.
That is what I like about New York.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because it keeps like, going. But it keeps moving, whereas like in Vancouver, like I'm trying to fucking walk and people are, I'm trying to fucking walk in here.
Yeah.
And people are just like slow. They like step out in front of you and just kind of stop and just like trundle.
Mm-hmm.
And like, get out of my way. Like London too. You can just like, you merge into the sea and you just keep moving with everybody. I fucking love it.
I love that feeling too. You know, not all the time. And I live in a nice sort of quieter part of Brooklyn so that I can just go like, But I do like that feeling of when you get up out of the subway and everybody's just kind of like taking off together.
Manhattan, make it happen.
It's right? like a murmuration of swallows.
Ooh, see, you got it.
You got that big word.
I bet somebody's already written a short film called New York Murmuration and it's got like a piano soundtrack to
it. I'm sure. Yeah.
And the camera pans up and it's Alicia Keys because she's the only one who's allowed to play piano songs about New York.
Get out.
No. This is my house, my rules.
Not anymore.
No.
Oh, no, she's actually leaving.
Just
Bye.
The holy of the dark closing.
Oh, good, she's finally
I'm back.
Gone. Oh, no, she's back.
I came back.
Good Foley.
Thanks. It's just the real thing. There's nothing like the real thing, baby.
Anyway, what else should we talk about? I think we're going to take a little break. We're in a super hot, sweaty room. You have to leave to go do some more exciting things.
I do.
Katie has to leave because it's her. Speaking of
very exciting
good
things.
Relationship stuff, you're having a 5-year wedding anniversary today.
Katie?
Yeah.
Congratulations.
It was actually on Thursday, the Lord's Day. our Lord and Savior, Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah,
day.
Yeah.
5 years married. It'll be 10 years together in November. So
my goodness,
Congratulations. Keep it tight. Keep it real tight. A lot of kegels. Just kidding. No, I like my wife. You know, we have had lots of troubles and things in our lives, but you know, counseling and also caring a lot about each other.
That's
just
all
being
it is,
like,
man.
We are devoted to this partnership. Even if you drive me crazy sometimes. Like, sometimes it's just your roommate bothers you. It's not your partner. It's your roommate is bugging you. And I'm like, you're being a roommate right now. Leave me the fuck alone. Mm. I love you. Go away.
That's good.
And being able to say that and also be like, oh, I'm really happy you're back because she was down in Arizona for, like, the whole week. And then she came back yesterday and it's so nice to see her. I was just so excited to go to the airport and pick her up. But even though I had to drop her off at, like, 6:30 in the morning on Monday.
Mm-hmm. That's rough.
Yes, but that's love.
That is love.
It's also just like, yeah, that's the action of love, not the it's the verb, not the noun, right?
I was going to say, love is a verb.
Love is a verb. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Love is getting up at ungodly hours to drive people places.
It's true.
Love is driving Katie to the ferry terminal because she doesn't want to take transit.
I did that for you, of course.
Yes, you did. You super did. That's why I was making a point of it.
I know. Yeah. Mm. We had a little date on this week as well, spontaneous
date.
Oh,
boy, did we have a nice little time.
We found a place on Commercial Drive near my place of occupation that has bottles of wine for half off on Wednesdays, so we definitely... And the fucking thing, the waitress was just like, oh, well, we were like, oh, we'll just get the one bottle and we'll split and then we'll each get a glass for an extra, and she's like, you know... It's basically the same price if you just get another bottle, and you're allowed to take it home with you because it has a screw top. And I'm like, what? This changes everything. Holy shit. So I just put the rest of the wine in my purse, and then I took it to the duck pond and watched, like, some bird drama happen. It was lovely.
BC has changed. I feel like that would have not flown.
Yeah, BC's got a cool mom now. BC's got a cool stepmom who moved in.
I love it.
She's letting us do whatever we want.
That's fabulous. Congratulations.
Thanks, Charlene. There she is again.
Yeah, I watched some crazy bird drama happen. There's, like, new ducklings in the duck pond, and an eagle that's moved in has, like, they were just trying to swoop down and, like, steal the ducklings.
Oh, no.
But it was kind of funny. We were watching it, and it's, like, this one tree that's, like, the skyscraper of the duck pond. Now an eagle is building a nest there, and it would, like, fly down to the pond, and you would just hear crack, and it would, like, tear a branch off a tree and, like, carry this huge fucking tree branch back up to the top of its tree.
Wild.
And
that's
we're
cool.
Just, like, I was like, oh, my God, it's, like, eagle gentrification. Like, it's building in the high-rise tower over there. It's, like, blocking the fucking view, terrorizing the children.
Oh, my God. That's very good.
But so I had never seen an eagle that up close. It came right down into where we were all sitting
They're
and
big,
fishing
hey?
For trout. They're so
insane.
Big.
Yeah.
They're huge.
They look prehistoric when you see them up
yes.
close.
They're very beautiful.
I love
raptors
them.
Of all kinds.
I love
They're just
them.
So cool.
But then, okay, so, like, the duck pond has this, like, total drama that always happens because all the different groups have their different role. And so
they're duck racists.
They're not racist. I'm telling you how they all work together.
Oh, okay, sure.
It's a beautiful harmony, and you can actually hear that they're speaking, like, a language that they all kind of understand in a common way, because as soon as the eagle came down, you hear, like, an alert call, and then the mama duck was just like, rah, 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 and, like, rounded up all the little babies and put them into,
like
the
tall duck.
Yeah, rounded up Huey, Dewey, and Louie and put them in the tall grasses. Yeah. But then these Canada geese came out. There was, like, 10 Canada geese. Came out and surrounded the log that the eagle
the
was sitting
enforcers.
On. They were totally, like, a gang. And then the eagle, like, got up and, like, swooshed down on them, and they hissed like I've never... Like, you know how they hiss when you come near them? And it was just, like, swoosh hiss. And I was like, oh my God, it looks like Canada versus America, right?
That's totally true.
That is really funny.
Amazing.
Which is hissing at you consequentially.
Yeah, yeah.
But then once the eagle was kind of gone, the crows then chased the eagle away.
Oh, wow.
And it's like this whole, like, it's a ballet of nature.
Circle of life.
Hakuna Matata.
But then you hear, like, another little sound that's, like, the all-clear signal, because then all
like, what's
of
what's
that?
It's a hummingbird here to really fuck shit up.
Yeah, yeah.
Just, like, going down the food chain to the mustard tail. And then now it's a bumblebee is taking over. Just the smallest of birds.
But, you know, then we caught some fucking trout and then pan-fried them. It was, like, a really good day. Really good day.
Wow.
How was your week? It was at the end of this whole...
It was good. I was a little too drunk to do that storytelling show that I did on Wednesday, but my story was fine. And then I had a glass of wine right after, and then I fell into a dish cart. Not into it, just, like, against it. And it clattered, and I was just like, get a hold of yourself, Katie. It's Wednesday. And then I went home. So it was pretty good, all told.
Cool.
I just, like, I can't drink that much on a Wednesday.
Yeah.
But I like it.
What storytelling show was it again?
It was stories... I believe it's called Story Story Drive, or it's just called Weekly Stories on the Drive, and it's hosted by Joe Dvorak, who also hosts Pascal, Story Story Lie, a real stellar lady. Yeah, it was just a nice little spot. I got to kind of just tell, like, four jokes around a story. So, because that's, you can just trick people like that and be like, oh, I wrote something totally new. They don't fucking know. They don't know. They're just plebs. Who gives a shit what they think?
Just civilians. I can't tell. Just kidding. We respect people.
I don't.
I had I did comedy twice this week. Had a lot of time to myself. Made some nice food. Hung out with my pets.
Cool.
Didn't write anything, didn't do anything super productive. It was
fine.
Sounds
awesome.
It was great. Yeah, I had the nice, laziest Thursday. Got pictures of my bones taken. It was pretty sick.
Fun.
My bones look good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I have it?
My bones?
The picture.
If I take pictures of the pictures, then yeah, for
sweet.
Sure. Are you collecting, like, inside pictures of your
yeah.
friends? Do you have Chris's MRIs?
No, can I have your MRI?
It's a video. You can't.
Whoa.
You can take still pictures of an MRI, but you won't get the whole brain.
Mm.
And I went to a research study.
Cool.
As like a control group for schizophrenia, and they took a whole MRI of my brain, and I was like, "Can I please have pictures?" And they're like, "Oh, well, actually, like you know, you can't take still photos." So they gave me a video, and so you can look at it, and it like morphs.
Cool.
And it's all inside of my brain, and I couldn't. See it well enough, and I just wanted them to tell me that I had the thing that musicians' brains have, where your corpus callosum is thicker than most people's,
uh-huh.
because the sides of your brain interact way more as a musician, because
oh,
you're
the
emotional plus the
math.
Technical together. Mm-hmm.
Cool.
So I'm like, do I got that thick corpus callosum or not? And they couldn't tell me.
It's like, is it T-H-I-C-C?
Yeah.
Thick.
Yeah. I'm sure most of me is, and so I would imagine that my corpus callosum is also.
Maybe
I feel
your
like
corpus callosum is so thick, I want to wrap my legs around it.
It's thicker, thicker than a bowl of oatmeal. I don't know, some guy said that while he was being arrested.
What?
To the arresting officer. Said, girl, you're thicker than a bowl of oatmeal. I was like, that's bold.
Wow.
And the officer was a woman?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Where was this?
Baltimore.
He was hoping for a Sir Psycho Sexy situation.
Yes, that is the second time that's come up in, like, two episodes.
I've been thinking about that a lot. You know, he gets stopped by a lady cop in his
mm-hmm.
automobile, and she said, get out and spread your legs, try to cop feel, et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera. We all know how the story goes.
Yes.
It's a classic boy meets girl.
Classic.
Wouldn't it be so funny if you had sex with Anthony Kiedis, and then he had, like, a super small ding-dong? And you're
it's
like,
possible.
What the hell? He's like, yeah, here's the thing. I have really big balls. That's how I kept the sock on. I was like, oh yeah, now that I can see it, those are huge balls.
And like, have you scripted this out? Yes, now I can see. You have huge balls.
Balls, sugar baby, sex magic.
He does not have a small dick. You take it back.
So
I just
mad.
Said, what if? This is like the Twilight Zone. I'm trying to create a space here.
I can't even imagine it. It can't be true.
It's impossible. I only like big-dicked men.
No, take it back! Nobody cares, it's fine. Does your dick work? Great. Does it not? Cool. Mm. Are you still good at other stuff?
Hard disagree.
Okay.
I need a big dick. You hear that, Canada?
It's gotta be a big one.
Yeah.
I'm just like, as long as he's not pulling a DJ Khaled and saying he doesn't go downtown.
Then. I mean, yeah. There's gotta be a combo of other things going on, but, I mean, that guy's done now.
He's done. You got it. You gotta eat it these days.
You gotta.
You gotta.
You gotta eat the ass, too. Everybody, get on board.
Mm.
Oh, that hasn't gotten here yet? It's coming.
No, it's already here.
We're
it's
also
just like,
in
we're
long-term
like
relationships.
Oh, right, so you don't
There's
have
There's, like,
to
youths. We've talked to youths who are, like, really into eating the booty, like, groceries.
I would totally fucking let somebody. I just don't have anyone that's gonna do that.
Right. I don't want.
I could probably ask.
Do you guys want me to eat your asses when we're done here?
I mean, I got time.